offering our most humble and loving salutations at Bhagwan's lotus feet. We welcome you, dear listeners, to yet another episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. And today, to share the stage with me is Brother Hari Shankar from the Central Trust. Sairam Hari, welcome to this program.
Sairam Priyam.
Hari, whenever we talk about listening, whenever we ruminate over this concept of listening, which is in itself a huge and a very, very deep concept. You know, the beautiful analogy which Swami gives, a small Chinnakatha, where a king is presented with three dolls.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he is asked to find out which one is the best among the three.
Mm.
So he calls his wise minister and he asks him, how do I know which among these three dolls is the best? So the minister asks for a thin wire or something like a long flexible wire, and he puts it through the ear of the first doll and it comes out through the other ear.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, this is the worst among the dolls. And he does it with the next doll. It goes in through one ear,
mm-hmm,
and comes out through the mouth.
Oh.
And he says, this is a little better, but this is not the best yet.
Right.
And the third one, when he pierces it through the ear, it goes right inside. And he said, this is the best among the three dolls.
Yes. So.
And I think that is what we need to do when we say Shravanam, when we listen to Swami's discourse, isn't it?
Exactly. And in fact, it is said that actually there is no one who listens. We can only catch ourselves not listening, but there is no one who truly listens.
Really, you never realize that you're listening.
Exactly. So the thing I think, like, we can tell ourselves as we're going to listen to Swami's discourse in a while, is to set aside what we already know about what Swami is saying and listen to him totally fresh with a totally new beginner's mind, as they say.
Right. In fact, you know, talking about meditation, I was just reading a very beautiful explanation of what is meditation.
Mm.
He said, see, it is not sitting and doing some pranayama or focusing on something which is outside, seeing the light within. He said, nothing like that.
Right.
It's just that you're filled with so many thoughts, so many concepts, so many ideas. Just like how you want to sit and write something, let's say you're a writer.
Mm.
You sit for a while, calm yourself down, remove yourself from all the other activities you've been having all through the day. That period is actually meditation.
Right.
And so that is required for any activity. It is not just for prayer, just for spiritual, sadhana. For any activity, that period of calmness which you willingly go through so that you calm down your mind.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is what we need every time we listen to Swami. And, you know, as we, first time when we spoke about this, Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam, mm-hmm, we said that every time Swami rises to give a discourse,
mm,
there would always be a pause.
Right.
And we're wondering why that pause.
Why the pause?
And we thought the most probable reason could be that Swami was just letting us settle down a bit.
Mm.
And, you know, I was reading another discourse. Apparently, Swami was addressing a gathering which was very noisy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And because it was a very crowded auditorium.
Right.
And very beautifully, Swami silences the crowd. You know, he says, I cannot complain that you're noisy because you are in such a cramped space and I'm in a relatively less cramped platform. Because otherwise, this is not how a spiritual gathering is.
Right. Okay.
And so immediately the crowd settles silence down and they realize that Swami wants more silence. Swami says, yeah, now it's a little better, I will talk. So Hari, we've finished three discourses in the series, the 1990 summer course series. And the past two discourses, you were part of one of the episodes. Swami was extensively speaking about the body and the body as an instrument. This discourse, the fourth discourse, which was delivered on 22nd of May 1990, Swami is going to talk about the senses. The title of the discourse itself is Mastery of the Senses. And one thing is, of course, it makes you wonder, how is the senses different from the body? Because, you know, you cannot think of senses without the body. So why Swami is separating the discussion of the body and the discussion on the senses?
Yes,
I think it will be really interesting to see what Swami has to say about the senses.
Right.
So we'll begin with the first clip, and it's about 9 to 10 minutes. At the end of the clip, we will see what we can recollect from what Swami has spoken.
Mm-hmm.
సకల విద్యను నేర్చి సహజించగవచ్చు సకల విద్యలు నేర్చి సభ జయించగవచ్చు. పూర్ణుడైరణమందు పోరవచ్చు. రాజరాజై పుట్టి రాజ్యమేలగవచ్చు. హేమ గోదానముల్యవచ్చు. రాజరాజై పుట్టి రాజ్యమేలగవచ్చు. హేమ గోదానముల్యవచ్చు. గగనమందున్న చుక్కలు రెక్కగొనవచ్చు. గగనమందున్న చుక్కలు లెక్కగొనవచ్చు. జీవరాశుల పేర్లు చెప్పవచ్చు. అష్టాంగ విద్యలు అభ్యసించగవచ్చు. అష్టాంగ విద్యలు అభ్యసించగవచ్చు. చంద్రమండలమైన చేరవచ్చు. దేహేంద్రియములరికట్టి మనసు నిల్పి అంతర్ముఖము చేసి అనవరతము నిశ్చల సమాన చిత్తుడై నిశ్చల సమాన చిత్తుడై నిలువలేడు.
One may master all the types of education and skills and win the victories in various courts. One may become a great hero and fight victorious wars. One may be born as an emperor and rule a great empire. One may be able to give in charity gold, cows, and such other valuables. One may be able to count the countless stars in the sky. One may be able to mention the innumerable names of lakhs of species and living beings. One may be able to master the eightfold Ashtanga Vidya. One may be able to reach the moon itself. But mastering the physical body and the sense organs and controlling them, and controlling mind, making it go introverted continuously, can anyone remain as a steady, equal-minded person throughout and continuously?
విద్యార్థులారా,
స్టూడెంట్స్,
శరీరమునకు ఇంద్రియములపైన ప్రభావం ఉన్నది.
ఫర్ ది బాడీ ద సెన్స్ ఆర్గన్స్ ఆర్ వెరీ ఇంపార్టెంట్ లింబ్స్.
ఇంద్రియములకు శరీరం పైన మరింత ప్రభావం అధికంగా ఉంటున్నది.
ది సెన్స్ ఆర్గన్స్ హ్యావ్ దెర్ ఓన్ కంట్రోల్ ఓవర్ ద ఫిజికల్ బాడీ.
శరీరమును మొదలు ఇంద్రియములు, ఇంద్రియముల మొదలు శరీరము ఉండుటకు వీలు కాదు.
దేర్ కెనాట్ బి ఫిజికల్ బాడీ వితౌట్ సెన్స్ ఆర్గన్స్ అండ్ సెన్స్ ఆర్గన్స్ వితౌట్ ఫిజికల్ బాడీ.
ఇవి రెండును అవినాభావ సంబంధం, అన్యోన్య ఆశ్రయం.
దేర్ ఈజ్ ఎ మ్యూచువల్ రిలేషన్షిప్ అండ్ ఇంటర్డిపెండెన్స్ బిట్వీన్ దీస్ టూ.
నెగిటివ్ లేక పాజిటివ్, పాజిటివ్ లేక నెగిటివ్, ఏ విధంగా ఉండి నిష్ప్రయోజనమో అదే విధంగానే దేహము లేక ఇంద్రియములు, ఇంద్రియము లేక దేహము ఉండుట నిష్ప్రయోజనమే.
జస్ట్ యాజ్ నెగటివ్ వితౌట్ పాజిటివ్ ఆర్ పాజిటివ్ వితౌట్ నెగటివ్ ఆర్ ఫంక్షన్లెస్, సో ఆల్సో ఇట్ ఈస్ ఇంపాసిబుల్ టు హ్యావ్ అండ్ యూజ్లెస్ ఆల్సో ఎ ఫిజికల్ బాడీ వితౌట్ సెన్స్ ఆర్గన్స్ అండ్ సెన్స్ ఆర్గన్స్ వితౌట్ ద బాడీ.
కనుక శరీరమును సరైన విధముగా దీనిని పోషించుకోవటము ప్రతి వ్యక్తికి కర్తవ్యం.
దేర్ఫోర్ ఇట్ ఈస్ డ్యూటీ ఎంజాయిన్డ్ ఆన్ ఎవ్రీ ఇండివిజువల్ టు టేక్ కేర్ ఆఫ్ ది బాడీ వెల్.
ఇక్కడ ఇంద్రియముల యొక్క తత్వము అత్యంత అద్భుతము.
ఇట్ ఈస్ వెరీ ఎక్స్ట్రాడినరీ టు సీ ద ఇన్ఫ్లుయెన్స్ అండ్ ద ఇంపాక్ట్ ఆఫ్ ద సెన్స్ ఆర్గన్స్.
దైవత్వం అనేది మహాచిత్ర విచిత్రమైనప్పటికీ ఇంద్రియముల యొక్క తత్వం కూడాను, ఇంద్రియముల యొక్క అనుభూతిని, ఇంద్రియముల యొక్క చేష్టలను వర్ణించుటకు అంతకంటే అద్భుతంగా ఉంటుంటాడు.
ఇట్ ఈస్ యాక్సెప్టెడ్ దాట్ డివినిటీ ఈజ్ రాదర్ స్ట్రేంజ్, యునిక్ అండ్ డిఫికల్ట్ టు డిస్క్రైబ్. బట్ వెన్ యూ సీ ది సెన్స్ ఆర్గన్స్ దే లుక్ స్ట్రేంజర్ అండ్ మోర్ యునిక్ కంపేర్డ్ ఈవెన్ టు గాడ్ హింసెల్ఫ్.
చిత్రంబులు, త్రైలోక్య విచిత్రంబులు, భవలతాల విత్తంబులు, సన్మిత్రంబులు, ఉద జన వన పౌత్రంబులు, ఇంద్రియముల యొక్క చరిత్రంబులు.
ది హిస్టరీ ఆఫ్ సెన్స్ ఆర్గన్స్ ఈజ్ రాదర్ స్ట్రేంజ్, డిఫికల్ట్ టు డిస్క్రైబ్, వెరీ ఎక్స్ట్రీమ్లీ అన్ప్రెడిక్టబుల్ అండ్ వెరీ యునిక్.
ఈ ఇంద్రియములు దేహము కంటే అతి సూక్ష్మమైనటువంటివి.
సెన్స్ ఆర్గన్స్ ఆర్ ఎక్స్ట్రీమ్లీ సటిల్ కంపేర్ టు ది బాడీ.
శరీరమునందు శబ్దస్పర్శ రూప రసగంధాదులు ఉండినప్పటికీ, వాతపిత్త శ్లేషాదులు ఉండినప్పటికీ, ఇంద్రియముల యొక్క తత్వము అన్నింటి యొక్క సమత్వంగా భావించుకుని తమ ప్రభావమును దేహం పైన చలాయిస్తూ ఉంటాయి.
ద ఫిజికల్ బాడీ ఈజ్ సబ్జెక్టెడ్ టు ద సౌండ్, ద టచ్ అండ్ ది అదర్ ఫైవ్ టైప్స్ ఆఫ్ ఫీలింగ్స్. ద సెన్స్ ఆర్గన్స్ స్టిల్ హ్యావ్ వెరీ ఎక్స్ట్రాడినరీ ఇన్ఫ్లుయెన్స్ ఆన్ ద ఫిజికల్ బాడీ ఇట్సెల్ఫ్.
ఇంద్రియములు విషయమును స్పర్శించినప్పుడే సుఖదుఖములు, శీతోష్ణములు సంభవిస్తున్నాయి.
ఓన్లీ వెన్ ది సెన్స్ ఆర్గన్స్ కమ్ ఇన్ టచ్ విత్ ది మ్యాటర్స్ అండ్ ది సబ్జెక్ట్, ది ఆబ్జెక్ట్స్, దెన్ ఓన్లీ యూ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ జాయ్, హ్యాపీనెస్ ఆర్ గ్రీఫ్ ఆర్ సారో.
విషయములు లేక ఇంద్రియములు క్షణమైన నిలువ జాలవు.
వితౌట్ సెన్స్ ఆబ్జెక్ట్స్ సెన్సెస్ విల్ నాట్ బి ఏబుల్ టు లివ్ ఈవెన్ ఫర్ ఎ మూమెంట్.
విషయ సంబంధమే ఇంద్రియముల యొక్క ప్రధాన కర్తవ్యం.
The most important functions of the sense organs is to enjoy the sense objects.
Indriyamulanu kevalamu ekanga bhavinchi divyanga varinchi bhavyanga cheenimpacheyatamu aneetundi vishayamuniki sadhyam kaadu.
Many people find it very difficult to see the extraordinary aspect of these sense organs.
Yes, sorry. That was the first clip.
Yeah.
The discourse.
So you started by telling all the listeners that the discourse is about the mastery of the senses. But right in the poem, Swami begins this discourse by saying that no matter what achievements you might have in the different realms of knowledge or in the physical world, but there is no one in this world who can control their body and senses.
Right. In fact, he is covering every possible field. Scholarship, bravery,
yes,
leadership, wealth, scientific knowledge, you know, and even sadhana. He is saying Ashtanga Vidya.
Ashtanga Vidya.
You might know all the yogas, and you know, but still that, and the very interesting word, even as Swami was telling this poem, and Swami says Kani, and we know that it's something almost like it's a O. Henry twist when it comes, whenever Swami says that Kani. And you know, even here Swami says that, is it possible to have constant introversion and unshakable equanimity?
Yes,
of
so
the senses.
Yeah, so this tells us one more thing. See, last time Swami dwelt a lot on the aspect of the body in the last few discourses.
Right.
This discourse, Swami is coming to the senses, and there is something behind the senses, something that is being fed by the senses. And the reason why we have to dwell on this aspect of mastery of the senses is, Swami, as he mentions in the poem, the reason is to be able to keep the mind in a state of equanimity, that is, unaffected by what happens, what is fed to it by the senses. So that is the goal to which we have to reach, and which is why the discourse dwells on this, the mastery of the senses. So we, as humans, we are part of the body-mind complex. So the body with its senses and the mind, and how can we realize our entity, our being as distinct from the body and the mind?
Right. And, you know, the very first statement Swami makes after the poem, you know, the body wields some influence over the senses. But the senses have even greater influence on the body. It's quite true. The very first sentence, you know, the body wields, I was wondering how the body can affect your senses. But it's actually seen, you know, when you see people who have an impurity.
Right.
Those who are blind will have sharp hearing.
Yes.
Those who are, you know, deaf will have some other sensory perception which is much stronger than average.
Right.
So that which is a deformity in your body actually influences your senses.
Yeah, it changes the acuity, increases the acuity of certain senses.
You know, the sharpness of the other senses.
That's the similar
thing is, but the senses have even greater influence on the body. That is very obvious. You know, suppose somebody comes and tells you something inflammatory or something which makes you angry,
yes,
the whole body reacts to it.
That's right.
Though what is being used is only one sense of the five which you have,
correct,
the entire body shivers, and you know, there's anger, your BP rises.
Yes.
And if you're a weak patient, a heart is weak, it might even endanger your life.
Yeah, because the two primal responses of anger and fear, that is something we do not have any control
right.
over. As they call it, the amygdala response. So this comes from a very deep part of the brain. It's called the lizard brain, in fact.
Is it? Okay.
Yes. So, the senses directly feed this. So, the first response is that every human is designed for is this, like fear, and they call it flight or fight.
Okay.
So, these two responses come from a very deep part of the brain. So that is how, you know, the moment the brain, you know, responds in a certain way, like there's nothing that we can control. It's completely involuntary. So our fight or flight response is completely involuntary.
And I think that is what Swami is telling in this poem also. That through the senses, you can slowly influence the mind.
Yes.
Though the mind is influencing the senses, there is this backward flow also. So Swami is saying that introversion of the mind can in time lead to unshakable equanimity. I mean, introversion of the senses can lead to unshakable equanimity of the mind. And, you know, coming to this point where Swami is saying the role of the senses is remarkable. Because later in the discourse, I think Swami goes into each one of the senses and he says how great this is.
Yeah.
But, you know, one thing which always comes to mind when we're talking about human senses, you know, we were actually going through a documentary, something like a user manual, about a camera.
Right.
And saying, how do you grade cameras? How do you know that this video camera is better than the other one? One of the things which we see is how fast it can go from infinite focal length to a shorter focal length. How quickly it can refocus.
Okay.
You know, and then they give that this happens in this many
microseconds,
and you know, this is where this is, and this is more expensive and all that. And the end of that description in the documentary, he says, but all these cameras are no comparison to the human eye because it does it almost instantly.
Right.
They're not able to measure how quickly that refocusing from infinity. Because I'm looking at you, my vision is in focus. The moment I look behind you, I'm again in focus. It takes no time for my eye to readjust and focus there. But it doesn't happen with the camera. The best cameras we've made are still way behind that.
Yes, right. And actually, Swami brings out one very important point over here, that what are all the activities of the senses? What do they create? They create one phenomenon, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually create the phenomenon called the person. Because the senses are the kind of the boundary between what we perceive as ourselves and what we perceive as the world around us.
Absolutely, right.
So the moment, you know, an input comes from the senses, we suddenly become aware of two entities, literally, the world and ourselves. So it's very important to really dwell on what the senses, like what Swami is talking about, because somewhere here is a secret to, you know, like really getting that there is no distinction between the world and us.
Very true, because that is what explains the outward nature of the senses.
Hmm.
Because its very interaction is with everything which is outside.
Exactly.
Like, you know, you don't need your ear to hear your inner voice. Right? You don't need your eyes to see, to have a, you know, insight within.
Inner vision, yes.
So I think all the senses are giving you input from the outside. And as you said, that is what actually defines us.
Yes.
You know, the way we react.
That and, yeah, exactly.
And the processing said, which goes on.
Yeah, you know? So there are two things. Like, as you said, first of all, the what the senses feed to the mind. And how the mind reacts to that. So these two constitute the persona, so to speak. The person who is there, like, different kind of stimuli elicit different responses from different people. And we say, like, such and such person, he is a very equable person. He does not react too strongly to some situations. Whereas someone else, we say he's got a short fuse. Whereas the stimuli that enters is pretty much the same.
Right.
So the sense organs are, feeding literally the same input to different people. But the way they react is, that is where the, you know, the master, that is the mind, which is there behind the senses.
Okay, in fact, you know, one of the discourses, Swami makes this very point.
Hmm.
He says if death is going to give sorrow, every death should give everybody sorrow.
Sorrow, exactly.
He said, you know, why you feel sad or bad only if somebody near to you dies? And, you know, when you are feeling sorrowful, why everybody around you are not feeling the same?
No, in fact, it's not even death. I remember Swami bringing out this in a discourse. He says, if sense objects as such bring joy to you, but you notice that the same, like even if I bring food in front of somebody, some person enjoys the same food so much, relishes it so much. Someone else just says, I don't want it. They just brush it off. So he says, as such, it is not the sense objects. Then who is it that experiences that joy?
Right, you know, and actually that is one of the main things in the later part of the discourse, Swami will come to that, you know, impermanency of everything the sense object interacts with.
Yes.
Is actually an important input which has to be given to the mind. So that it prepares itself to process the information in the right way.
Right.
And, you know, and coming to this point where Swami is telling that, you know, the body is the basis for the senses, but the senses are much, much more subtler than the body. In fact, it seems in the Prashnottara Vahini, there is this point where somebody asks Swami, what constitutes the pranamaya kosha?
Right.
You know, the five sheets, you have the annamaya, pranamaya, manumaya, vijnanamaya and
anandamaya.
So he asks what constitutes the pranamaya. That time Swami says this point, that it is made of the five senses and the five vital eyes.
Yes.
So there is a Swami saying, and each kosha is progressively more subtler.
Yes.
So the body which comes in the Annamaya kosha
is the grossest.
Is the gross. And the senses actually come in a step higher between the mind and the body.
Body.
I think that was pretty much what Swami was telling there.
Yes, so maybe we could play the
we'll go to
next part of the discourse. So.
The second part of the.
ఈ ఇంద్రియములకు ఒక చక్కని పేరు గలదు.
There is a beautiful name given to these sense organs.
మాత్రాహ అని దీనికి ఒక పేరు.
The name is మాత్రాహ.
ఇది నీయతే మిత్రతే ఇది మాత్రాహ అని. అనగా ఒక విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క కొలతలను నిర్ణయం స్వావించినటువంటిదే ఈ ఇంద్రియముల యొక్క ప్రభావం.
One of the important features of the sense organs is that they can measure.
ఈ కొలతలు ఏ విధంగా గావించుతున్నవి ఇంద్రియములు?
How do they measure?
ఈ ఫలము తీయగా ఉన్నది లేక పుల్లగా ఉన్నది అని నిర్ణయించేటువంటి యొక్క అధికారం దేనికున్నది?
To decide the type of taste which a fruit has, which sense organ has.
దీనిని కొలతవేసేటువంటి ఇంద్రియములు ఏమిటి?
What is the organ which allows it to go into the stomach?
అదే నాలుక.
That is tongue.
ఈ నాలుక పదార్థము యొక్క మంచితిట్టలను కొలత వేసి ప్రమాణపూర్వకంగా జగత్తుకు అందిస్తున్నది.
The tongue has the capacity to decide the taste of a particular object and allow it to go into the tummy.
ఈ చిత్రము విచిత్రంగా ఉన్నది, వికారముగా ఉన్నది అని చిత్రము యొక్క చిత్ర విచిత్రములను నిర్ణయించేటువంటి కొలత దేనికున్నది?
What particular sense organ has the power to decide that a particular picture is either beautiful or ugly?
ఇది దీని కొలత బద్ద కన్ను మాత్రమే.
The measuring rod of the beauty or otherwise is eye.
ఇంకా ఇదే విధముగానే అన్ని ఇంద్రియములు కూడాను ఇది దుర్గంధము, ఇది సుగంధము అని నిర్ణయించేటువంటి కొలత బద్ద ముక్కు.
Nose is the measuring rod which measures whether the smell is good or bad.
ఇది సుస్వరము, ఇది దుస్వరము అని కూడాను నిర్ణయించేటువంటి యొక్క కొలత బద్ద కర్ణము.
It is the ear which decides whether a particular sound is melodious.
కనుకనే ఈ ఇంద్రియములకు నిర్ణయించేటువంటి అధికారం ఉన్నది కనుకనే దీనికి మాత్రాహ అని ఒక పేరు.
దే హావ్ బీన్ కాల్డ్ మాత్రాహ బికాస్ దే హావ్ గాట్ ది కెపాసిటీ టు డిసైడ్ మెజర్.
కఠోపనిషత్తునందు శరీరం అనే రథమునకు ఇంద్రియములు అశ్వముల వంటివి అని నిర్ణయించారు.
ఇట్ హాస్ బీన్ సెడ్ దాట్ ఫార్ ది చారియట్ ఆఫ్ ది ఫిజికల్ బాడీ ది సెన్స్ ఆర్గన్స్ ఆర్ హార్సెస్.
ఈ యొక్క ఇంద్రియములకు అశ్వములు అని పేరు పెట్టడంలో ఉండినటువంటి అంతరార్థం ఏమిటి?
వాట్ ఈస్ ది ఇన్నర్ మీనింగ్ బిహైండ్ గివింగ్ ది నేమ్ ఆఫ్ హార్సెస్ ఫర్ దిస్?
అశ్వము అనగా నిరంతరము చలించేటువంటి స్వభావం కలిగినటువంటిది అశ్వం.
ద మీనింగ్ ఆఫ్ అశ్వము ఆర్ హార్స్ ఈస్ దట్ ఇట్ ఆల్వేస్ అండ్ కంటిన్యూస్లీ గో ఆన్ మూవింగ్.
అందరికీ కూడా తెలిసిన విషయమే. గుర్రము నిద్రించుచుండినా మేల్కొని చుండినా పరిగెత్తుచుండినా నిలిచి ఉండినా నిరంతరము తన యొక్క దేహం నందు ఏదో ఒక అంగమును కదిలిస్తూనే ఉంటుంటాడు.
ఎవరీ వన్ నోస్ దిస్ ఫ్యాక్ట్ దాట్ ఎ హార్స్ వెదర్ స్లీపింగ్ స్టాండింగ్ మూవింగ్ ఆర్ లయింగ్ డౌన్ ఆల్వేస్ కీప్స్ వన్ లింబ్ ఆర్ ది అదర్.
తోక తప్పితే కాలో, కాలు తప్పితే చెయ్యో, చెయ్యి తప్పితే ముక్కో, ముక్కు తప్పితే నోరో, ఏదో ఒకటి కదిలిస్తూనే ఉంటుంటాడు.
వెదర్ ఇట్ ఇస్ ద లెగ్, హ్యాండ్, ఇయర్ ఆర్ ద హెడ్, ఇట్ గోస్ ఆన్ మూవింగ్.
చలన స్వభావం కలిగినటువంటిది కనుకనే దీనికి అశ్వము అని పేరు వచ్చింది.
యాజ్ ఇట్ కాన్స్టెంట్లీ కీప్స్ మూవింగ్ ఇట్ హాస్ బీన్ గివెన్ ద నేమ్ అశ్వము.
అదే విధంగానే మనం వృక్షము చూస్తున్నాము, రావి వృక్షము.
వీఆర్ సీయింగ్ లెట్ అస్ జస్ట్ సే పీపుల్ ట్రీ.
అయితే అది గాలి లేకపోయినా కూడాను దాని ఆకులు ఎప్పుడూ ఆడుతూనే ఉంటుంటాయి.
Even when there is no breeze entirely, the leaves will be moving in such a tree.
Kanugane daniki kudano ashwattha vrutchamu ani peru pettaru.
That is the reason that tree is called ashwattha vrutchamu.
Prachina rajulandaru kudano ashwamedha yagam aneetundi dani oka pratyekamainatundi yagamnu kalpeetundi varu.
In the ancient days, the kings used to perform a yaga called ashwamedha yaga.
Ashwamedha, దీని రెండు పదముల యొక్క అంతరార్థమును గుర్తించుకున్నప్పుడు ఇది అశ్వమేధం అంటే ఏమిటి అనేటువంటిది మనకు సుస్పష్టంగా అర్థమవుతుంది.
వెన్ యూ డివైడ్ దట్ వర్డ్ అశ్వమేధ ఇంటూ అశ్వ అండ్ మేధ, యు అండర్స్టాండ్ ది సిగ్నిఫికెన్స్ ఆఫ్
మేధ అనగా బుద్ధి.
మేధ రెఫర్స్ టు ఇంటెలిజెన్స్.
అశ్వం అనగా చలించేటువంటి బుద్ధి.
అశ్వ రెఫర్స్ టు ది మూవింగ్, దట్ ఈస్
ఈ చలించేటువంటి బుద్ధికి సంబంధించినటువంటి ప్రతిబింబమే అశ్వం.
A horse is a symbol of unsteady mind, moving mind.
ఈ అశ్వమేధ యాగమునందు ఈ అశ్వమును ఎవరు పట్టగలరో వారే ధీమంతులు అని పేరు.
ఇట్ ఈస్ సెడ్ దట్ ఇన్ అశ్వమేధ యాగ ద వన్ హూ కెన్ హోల్డ్ దిస్ అశ్వ ఆర్ హార్స్ అండ్ కంట్రోల్ ఇట్ హీఈస్ కన్సిడర్డ్ టు బి ఎ గ్రేట్ హీరో.
కశ్చ ధీరః అని ప్రశ్నించింది భగవద్గీత. ఎవరు దీనిని పట్టేటువంటి వారు, ఎవరు దీనిని అడగదొక్కేటువంటి వారు, ఎవరు దీనిని కొంతవరకు నిగ్రహించేటువంటి వారు, వారే నిజమైన ధీరుడు అన్నారు.
భగవద్గీత హాస్ డిక్లర్డ్ దట్ ద వన్ హూ కెన్ హోల్డ్ దిస్ హార్స్, హూ కెన్ కంట్రోల్ ఇట్, హూ కెన్ కీప్ ఇట్ స్టడీ ఈజ్ ద వన్ హూ ఈజ్ ఎ హీరో.
కనుకనే మన ఇంద్రియములను అరికట్టి ఇంద్రియములను స్వాధీనం చేసుకున్నటువంటి వ్యక్తియే నిజమైన ధీమంతుడు అనేటువంటి విషయం లోపల బాహ్యార్థముగా భౌతికమైనటువంటి జగత్తునందు ఈ అశ్వమును ఎవరు పట్టగలరో వాడే ధీమంతుడు, అతనితోనే యుద్ధము చేసేటువంటి అధికారం ఉన్నది అనేటువంటి యొక్క ప్రాచీన రాజుల యొక్క ప్రభావమును నిరూపిస్తూ వచ్చారు.
ద ఇన్నర్ మీనింగ్ ఆఫ్ అశ్వమేధ యాగ ఈస్ ద వన్ హూ కెన్ కంట్రోల్ ది సెన్స్ ఆర్గన్స్, హూ కెన్ మేక్ దెమ్ స్టడీ ఈజ్ ఎ హీరో. సింబాలికలీ అండ్ ఎక్స్టర్నలీ దే హావ్ కంపేర్డ్ దిస్ టు ద వన్ హూ కెన్ హోల్డ్ ఎ హార్స్ ఈజ్ ఎ హీరో.
ఇక్కడ అంతరార్థము బాహ్యార్థము రెండింటి యొక్క అంతరాత్మ బాహ్యార్థం యొక్క సమన్వయమే నిజమైనటువంటి యథార్థము.
ది ట్రూ మీనింగ్ లైస్ ఇన్ హార్మనైజింగ్ ద ఇన్నర్ మీనింగ్ ఆఫ్ అశ్వమేధ అండ్ ది ఎక్స్టర్నల్ మీనింగ్ ఆఫ్ అశ్వమేధ.
కనుక ఈనాడు ప్రతి మానవుడు కూడాను ఈ అశ్వాన్ని పట్టి కట్టాలి.
టుడే దేర్ ఫోర్ దేర్ ఈస్ ఎ నీడ్ ఫార్ ఎవ్రీవన్ టు మేక్ ఎన్ ఎఫర్ట్ టు కంట్రోల్.
అప్పుడే నీ ధీరుడవుతావు.
Then only you become a hero.
ఎన్ని యాగములు, ఎన్ని యజ్ఞములు, ఎన్ని క్రతువులు, ఎన్ని గ్రంథములు, ఎన్ని విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క పారాయణములు చలిపినప్పటికీ దీనిని నిగ్రహించలేనిటువంటి యొక్క నిశ్శక్తుడు ఇవన్నింటిని వ్యర్థము గావించినటువంటి వాడే.
ద పర్సన్ హూ ఈజ్ వీక్ అండ్ హూ కెనాట్ కంట్రోల్ ద మైండ్ అండ్ ద సెన్స్ ఆర్గన్స్, వాట్ ఎవర్ టైప్ ఆఫ్ సాధనాస్ హీ అండర్టేక్స్, వాట్ ఎవర్ టైప్ ఆఫ్ యజ్ఞ హీ డస్, ఇట్ ఈస్ రియలీ యూజ్లెస్.
కనుక ఈ ఇంద్రియములకు మరొక అర్థం కూడా ఉంటుంది, అది మాత్ర అనేటువంటి దానికి.
దెర్ ఈస్ వన్ మోర్ మీనింగ్ ఫర్ దిస్ వర్డ్ మాత్ర సిగ్నిఫైయింగ్ ఇంద్రియాస్,
అనగా పరిమితమైనటువంటి నిర్ణయించేటువంటిది ఇంద్రియములు.
దిస్ సెన్స్ ఆర్గన్స్ కెన్ ఓన్లీ డిసైడ్ థింగ్స్ విచ్ ఆర్ సబ్జెక్ట్ టు లిమిటేషన్స్.
ఒక్కొక్క ఇంద్రియములకు ఒక్కొక్క పరిమితి మాత్రమే నిర్మించినాడు, నియమించినాడు భగవంతుడు.
God has prescribed certain limits for each sense organ.
Kannu chudagalade gaani vinaledu.
I can only see but it cannot hear.
Noru maatadagalade gaani chudaledu.
Mouth can talk but cannot see.
Itta okkokka indriyamunaku okkokka vidhamainatundi ninnitamainatundi yokka nibandhananu salipadu.
God has prescribed certain specific functions ఫర్ ఈచ్ ఆఫ్ ది సెన్స్ ఆర్గన్.
దీనికి నియమించినటువంటి యొక్క నియమములను ఎవరు సక్రమంగా నడుచుకుందరో వారే భగవత్ ఆజ్ఞను పరిపాలించినటువంటి వారు అవుతారు.
ఓన్లీ దట్ పర్సన్ హ్యాస్ క్యారీడ్ అవుట్ ద కమాండ్స్ ఆఫ్ ద లార్డ్ హూ ఫాలోస్ అండ్ యూజ్ ఆఫ్ ది సెన్స్ ఆర్గన్.
ఎవరు ఈ నియమంను ఉల్లంఘించో వారు దీని యొక్క శిక్షకు గురి అవుతారు.
హూ ఎవర్ వయలేట్స్ ది స్పెసిఫిక్ ఫంక్షన్ ఆఫ్ ది సెన్స్ ఆర్గన్ వుడ్ హావ్ వయలేటెడ్ ది కమాండ్.
ఒక్కొక్క ఇంద్రియమును దాని నిర్ణయానుసారంగా ఉపయోగించుకుని దానిని రక్షించుకోవడానికి ప్రయత్నించాలి.
ఎవ్రీవన్ షుడ్ ట్రై టు యూజ్ ది సెన్స్ ఆర్గన్స్ అకార్డింగ్ టు ది ఫంక్షన్ ఫర్ విచ్ దే ఆర్ ప్రిస్క్రైబ్.
Yes, sorry, that was the second part, and Swami is going on with the sense objects. And Swami introduces this just like in the first discourse, how Swami was giving terminologies which are used to describe the human body.
Yes.
Deham, Shariram. And here Swami is saying the senses have a name called Matraha, which in essence means a measuring instrument.
Yes. So just previous to this, Swami was talking about the senses as a sort of our window to the world.
Right.
Through which we experience the world itself. But here Swami says that the senses do beyond that. They also evaluate. So, as he says, like, which is the sense which discriminates what is sour, what is sweet, or which is that which decides the taste of the object. So here you are making one point that it's not, you know, very passive. The senses are also involved in evaluating. So they're also sending us signals that this is good, this is bad. So that constant judgment is something that, whether we notice or not, is always taking place. If you really, as Swami was saying, why is it that there is no one who can really control the mind? So there is one thing Swami has said in this respect. He says, it is very much akin to trying to straighten out the tail of a dog. So you might hold it still, but the moment you remove your hand, the tail is going to curve back again. So it's much the same way. If we actually notice our thoughts, like we'll see that this is going on all the time, no matter what. Even as now, say you and I are listening to each other, even as we speak to each other, you will notice this. It is going on, the evaluation. Is it right? Is it wrong? Do I agree with this? Do I disagree with this? Is this useful? Is this not useful? This is an evaluation that is always going on. And this is partly fed, as Swami says over here, by the senses. So that is an important point, that the senses evaluate.
Right. And, you know, just talking about the senses being a window and the senses being an instrument. Because very interestingly, you said that the senses are the ones which actually create the duality. And in the duality, the further differentiation also happens because of the senses. Apart from seeing the world as separate from us,
yes,
in the world it says that this is good, this is bad, this is right, this is wrong,
this is wrong,
this is pleasant, this is unpleasant.
Yes, likes, dislikes,
right,
joy, and sorrow, as Swami mentioned.
Right. And you know, and that is the thing. Many times, I don't know, I've tried this experiment. When you experience something unpleasant, let's say an unpleasant odor comes by your way, or something which is not pleasant to you. You know, if we were to just stop and think, why is it unpleasant? It is just that we have trained to think that this is unpleasant odor, or you know, this is good and this is bad.
Yeah.
And it is kind of brought into us with that idea.
Brought into us, but also it forms a very important function. Like from the scientific viewpoint, it is something that keeps the body alive. So if you know, like our primitive our primitive ancestors, so what would keep them alive is something which, you know, some certain fruit or something, let's say something has decayed. So it emits a kind of smell which instinctively we recoil from. That is because as far as the body is concerned, that is toxic.
Right.
So in that sense, these senses are something which keep the body alive. Like the input from the senses is something, it's a very primitive response. They're absolutely necessary to the functioning of the body.
Right. And that actually also brings in the idea that, you know, it is wrong to see ourselves as a separate entity. Because, you know, just like how in the human body, as you said, the odor is for a particular purpose. You repel from something which is not good for you.
Yeah.
The odor is a stimulus and it kind of sends that signal. Similarly, the whole world is actually, you know, like a jigsaw puzzle which is put together.
Right.
You know, I was reading an article the other day where it was talking about the chemical processes which happen in the ripening of a mango. So he says, finally he asks an essential question. He says, why is the mango sweet?
Right.
And he said, because you have to eat it.
Exactly.
Okay, he says, the mango tree cannot move around.
Yes.
So if it has to spread its growth, I mean, if it has to make sure that another tree comes up somewhere else,
yeah,
it has to make sure that it is sweet enough so that the mammals eat it and put the seed somewhere.
Exactly.
So the very reason why the mango is pleasant smelling and sweet in taste is so that you will eat. So we think that, you know, I don't like. But actually, it is a bigger plan which decides these are things which you have to like, these are things which you have to repel from.
Yeah. So it's essentially part of, as we say, the human design, or like the design of planet Earth itself. So this is where, you know, now the discussion will start about, okay, in that case, let's leave the senses as they are. You know, so let the senses are there for a particular reason. Let's use them for that very reason. I mean, let's do what the senses tell us to do. That will keep us alive.
Right. So
why is it that you should try to transcend the senses? Aren't you bringing some dangers? Aren't you putting yourself in peril in that case? So this is where Swami's injunction or his reminder to us that we are not human beings who are aspiring to have a divine experience.
Absolutely.
We are actually divine beings who are having a human experience. So here, the first thing is for us to be very present to what is a human experience all about. There are the senses, they have a certain function, but they also curtail us in certain ways from expressing who we truly are. So that is a challenge that we have. So in a body that has senses, which is designed for a particular task, how do we use these senses instead of being used by the senses? Most of us, as we see, in fact, like Swami goes on to talk about this very particular concept when he says that one more name for the senses, it's rather an analogy, is to a horse. So Swami explains that a horse, if you notice a horse, it's something or the other is always twitching. It's either its ears are twitching, or it begins to shake, its legs shiver, or the tail, you know, it just wags it. So all the time a horse, although standing literally at a place, even when it is sleeping, it is never still. So he says that the nature of the senses, the nature of the mind, is so much akin to that of the horse. And then he goes on to say that actually we, those of us who have read the, you know, ancient scriptures or the stories from those times, the Ashwamedha Yajna is definitely something which would have caught our imagination,
right,
as children.
I think there are at least minimum of 4 or 5 references only in the Ramayana for the Ashwamedha Yajna. Every ancestor of Rama is said to have performed an Ashwamedha Yajna.
Yes. So it is something we feel like it was a challenge, you know, at that time. Actually the challenge consisted of freeing a horse.
Right.
If I remember right, a white horse.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. You have to free a white horse, and the you know, like if a rival king, he, you know, takes...
manages to...
Yeah, he takes on and possesses that horse, but he has to fight
the one who is doing the yajna.
Yeah, the yajna. So the one who is performing the yajna has to fight that king and win back the horse. So that, in that way, establishes his dominion. So that is something that, you know, as children captures your mind, you know, some conquest and thing like that. But the conquest here, Swami says, is not at the physical realm, it is at a spiritual realm. So this is where, so the mind and the senses being what they are, the challenge is, like, can you be the master of the senses instead of the senses being your master?
That, you know, the other analogy Swami would give with mind and senses and horses, again, is that of a chariot. Swami would say the body is a chariot.
Chariot. Yeah.
And the horses are the senses. And the mind is the charioteer. And you are the one who is traveling. You are the master who is traveling in the chariot.
Yes.
See, the beautiful thing is, again, the question which you raised, if the senses are meant for being attracted to certain objects, why should you curtail them?
Yes.
Right? It's exactly the analogy which Swami has placed, puts each one in the level of importance that has to be given to it. The chariot definitely needs the horses, but it needs the horses. The chariot should not be allowed to be dragged by the horses. No, you need the horses to go where you want to go.
Where you want to go, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So the horses have a certain role to play. They're definitely important. And the nature of the horses is something which you're using in the process. You know, the horses go in a certain direction when you give them a whip.
Yes.
Right? So you use that nature of the horse to do what you're supposed to do.
Yes. And just before we move on, like, it reminded me of a very interesting analogy which comes in the tradition of Zen stories. So it is said that there were two monks in a Zen monastery. So they noticed that there's a flag that was flapping in the wind. So they were debating among themselves. So one said, the flag is moving. So the other person said, no, it is not the flag that is moving, it is actually the wind that is moving. And as they debated about this, they approached their Zen master. And he said, both of you are wrong. It is actually the mind that moves.
Wow.
Neither the flag moves, nor the wind moves. It is your mind that moves. So this, again, it brings us back to this fact that finally, no matter what the senses are up to, there is, as you mentioned, the charioteer called the mind. So that is really the CPU, that is where the actual action is going on.
Right.
Right.
And in fact, you know, even talking about the mind, very interestingly, even the charioteer the way he, you know, steers the horses and, you know, takes the chariot around is one of the roles he plays.
Yes.
And that one role is that of the buddhi.
Hmm.
You know, Swami says the buddhi is not something different. It is one aspect of the mind, that aspect which does the discrimination and takes the right decisions.
Right.
You know, Swami would give in a discourse, Swami was telling once, even as he was talking, he said, see, now you're sitting and listening to me.
Hmm.
Your attention is in what I'm saying. But if the wind wafts the smell of the bakery or the pakodas which are being fried in the canteen, and the moment that smell comes, you feel that, hey, let me get up and, you know, have a break and come.
Right.
But there's something in you which says that, no, you know, what you're listening is more important than what you would get if you go following the smell.
Wonderful.
And somebody said, that is the buddhi. You know, it is, as we again, can reiterate, the senses were meant to be attracted to that smell. You know, that was the idea of the senses.
Yeah.
But again, that was for a certain purpose.
Exactly.
And that is why, again, you know, the second part of the matraha, what Swami speaks, is that it also means a limit.
Yeah.
Again, coming to that point of the limited company that the body is, Swami is bringing in that idea.
So, to begin with, there is a certain intention, like as... this is something very profound, really, when it comes to this. See, what happens is, in the practice of spirituality, in the practice of Advaita, they say, you begin by first negating everything. You say, not this, not this, not this. Till you finally, you finally realize that you are actually one with everything. So, likewise, so the, the reason that Swami, I remember one Swami, in one interaction with me, Swami was asking about some particular aspect, and I said no in a very dismissive manner to that. Like, Swami asked me to, do something, I said no in a very dismissive manner. And Swami then said, like, everything is important. Everything in this life is important. And later I wondered, you know, in spirituality we are actually trying to negate everything. In what sense? Then why is it that Swami said that even this is important? Even a blade of grass in this world is important. So why would Swami be giving it so much significance? And then it struck me that at the end of the spiritual journey, you realize that there is no one other than you. And then that this was created by you and just for your joy. You see, so that is the reason why the senses are there. The senses have been created for your own pleasure. But the moment you forget that you have created them and you start, you know, responding to the senses instead of the senses responding to you, that's when the trouble begins.
And really, you know, there's one analogy which Swami would give about controlling the senses. And when you're talking about neti, neti, you know, one thing is neti, neti, there's another beautiful explanation. They say, in the initial stages, as you said, not this, not this, not this, neti, neti. But when you have attained that truth, when you've seen the truth, you look back and say, it was not this, it was not only this.
Not only this.
It is this and something more.
Yes.
Okay, and talking about controlling the senses, Swami gives a very beautiful analogy. And, you know, when I read that, I was really fascinated. Swami said, what does it mean to control the senses? Okay. Swami said, if you tell that I know to drive a car, what does that mean? It does not mean that you have a car in the garage. Right? Having a car in the garage locked up and, you know, all covered up does not mean that you have control, you know how to drive a car. You know to drive a car when you actually take it out into the road and you know at what speed you have to drive.
Right.
You know when to slow down, when to speed up, when to turn right, you know, when you have to use the various gadgets in the car. That's when you are actually in command of the car.
Right.
Swami said the same thing with the senses.
Yes.
It does not mean, you know, complete withdrawal of the senses.
Yes.
It means to know how to use the senses.
Beautiful.
And, you know, that's when Swami actually, in that discourse, Swami was saying that was the example which people like Valmiki and Vasishtha were actually giving. They were realized people, but at the same time they had families.
Yes.
You know, they were also having children, they having families, because Swami said they were in control over themselves. Because they knew what was meant to be used when and where.
Precisely. Very powerful example.
And, you know, talking about, Swami was speaking about Ashwa and Ashoka tree in the same context.
Ashwata tree.
Yeah. Ashwata tree. Swami would say the people tree. And that's a sign, you know, the easiest way to know if there's even the gentlest breeze blowing is to see a peepal tree. Because you would see that even the gentlest breeze would make the whole tree. And you know, talking of animals, there's another analogy which Swami used to say, you know. And because Swami is telling, who's a man who's of courage? Who's a hero? You know, that's a question which comes in Bhagavad Gita. Swami says, Dhimanta.
Dhimanta.
And Swami says, the one who is able to control that horse, he is the true hero. And you know, Swami would say that, you know, you walk into a forest, okay, and there are wild animals there. You think you're a hero if you can manage and handle those animals, wild animals. Swami would say the senses and the attractions of the senses are like wild animals. And Swami would say even worse, they are invisible wild animals. Then you can imagine how much more difficult your task is.
Yeah, it would take a tremendous warrior to actually fight invisible enemies.
And you know, talking about this mantra, I think very beautifully Swami is saying that how he brings that idea of limit, what is, he's saying that, you know, the mouth is meant for a certain purpose. The eyes are meant for a certain purpose. They can do only that much. They are meant only, and that is where, you know, again coming back to the point of you asking, if the senses were meant for this, why not let them do what they do?
What they please.
You know, and that is where Swami is bringing the idea of limit. And again, the reversal of roles. The senses are meant to be used by the indweller. And it's not that the senses drag the indweller around.
Yes.
You know, the, again, the chariot analogy.
Analogy, yeah. Yeah, in that, like, in this discourse, actually, Swami has brought out both these, you know, both two meanings of the same word, no?
Right.
Like, on the one hand, he says these are measuring instruments in the sense that they evaluate, and, I mean, they judge, and at the same time, they're also instruments which limit is implied. So this is very often Swami has spoken about, like, the need for controlling the senses. So this is where the Swami's next probably going to move on to this, the core of the discourse of the mastery of the senses. Right.
And you were talking about this again, this point where Swami is saying the senses is based on the body. And they don't have an existence of their own. The senses are to be commanded by the mind. You know, left alone, they're meaningless. I think it's a very easy to understand thing, because the common saying which goes, never believe what your eyes see.
Yes.
Never believe what your ears have heard. Because you may be in a limited capacity to observe. There is so much before, you know, even when you make a measurement in science, you're always told to take a few readings and take the mean of that.
Yes.
Because it is believed that you may perform an error as part of the experiment itself. And that can be negated when you take a few readings and take the mean.
Yes.
It only means that at any point when you come in, your eyes, what the, you know, what they give you or what the senses actually provide you as information, may be incomplete.
Yes, that's a very important point to be noted, because really in our daily experience, this is something that we do not, we are not aware of. That we make an assessment about what is happening, but the more we tend to stick to it as the truth, that's when the real, you know, the war begins. We are at war with the rest of the world when we hold on to what we see with our senses as being the truth.
Right. In fact, that is why Swami would say that, you know, be open. I mean, to the devotees who used to come to him in the early years, Swami would say, be open. In the sense, don't base your judgment, even your faith, on what you just see. You know, be prepared to take all the inputs and then process it and come to a decision.
Yes.
You know, that is when they would say that, you know, you pray to Swami and Swami turns away and goes. It does not immediately mean that, oh, Swami is not listening to my prayer.
Exactly.
Oh, Swami is angry with me. Swami does not like me. That is when, you know, you immediately take your decision based on what the senses give to you straight away.
In fact, it is said, you know, the path to mastery is, it's not that a master, a divine master, is not someone who does not feel the same emotions as you and I do. Deep within, as I said, they are very primitive responses that happen in no time. We don't have a control over. But mastery is when we truly are aware of this mechanism, that these arise without our control. As somebody said, your first thoughts are not under your control, but you are responsible for what you think next and how you act next.
Right.
So your first actions are maybe out of your control, but you are responsible for how you react after that.
In fact, you know, that is one thing which Swami used to very often tell students. When whenever somebody would get up and tell Swami, Swami, I'm not able to control my mind. And Swami would say, yeah, mind is like that. Mind cannot be controlled.
Yes.
Okay. And like how Swami starts this discourse, the mind cannot be controlled.
Because the very nature of the mind.
The nature of the mind is that of a horse. It is, you know, it is always wavering.
Yes.
But Swami said, what you should do is, as much as possible, try not to follow the mind.
Hmm.
You know, because the mind doesn't have an existence of its own. It will roam around and it will come back to you.
As one, I remember this analogy given by a divine master. He was saying that supposing you are walking on a street and there are a flock of people is walking opposite you. So how would you move? Like, wouldn't you try to pick your way in between those people? Whereas if you notice each one of us, what we do is we are literally colliding with every single person who is there opposite us. Which is the same as saying that, you know, a variety of thoughts, they enter our mind. But what we tend to do is we, you know, go the way each thought leads us. Or in this case, each sense leads us. But we have to discriminate. The operative word for Swami was discrimination. So we have to discriminate, pick our way between those thoughts. And that is truly what is mastery over the senses.
And as Swami has been telling in all these discourses, that happens with practice. Swami would always say that practice, practice, practice is the most important thing. You know, you cannot sing one bhajan without practice.
Practice.
What do I tell about controlling the mind? That's what Swami would say. Because, you know, the thing, the main word in spirituality, if you see, is spontaneity.
Hmm.
You know, you can make a right decision with tremendous amount of mental gymnastics and discrimination and then take. But what is important is that end of the day when you are spontaneously taking the right decision, spontaneously giving up what is wrong. And that happens with practice. You know, when you talk about cricket, when you talk about any sport, you talk of mind, you know, the eye-hand coordination, as they would say.
Yeah.
You know, a person, especially cricket, and the person does not think that this is a ball which is coming at this length and this is the stroke I have to play. It just happens because he has played such a ball so many times in the nets.
Yes.
You know, and Swami says in spirituality also the same thing has to happen. When you've constantly, with effort, done it, a point will come when it is effortlessly comes out of you.
Yes. We have to gain our muscle in doing, being able to quell the mind, so to speak, or quell the senses.
So that indeed is a very interesting discourse and very eager to see what comes later in this discourse when Swami talks about mastering the senses, but that'll have to wait till next week because, dear listeners, the time in our studios is 2 minutes past 8:30. Bishu is here with his guest for his last segment outside, inside, deep inside, and I'm sure that is going to be an interesting segment too. So please stay tuned. Bishu will be joining you in a few moments. On behalf of Hari, I offer humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet and thank you all for joining us. Do stay tuned. Happy listening.